is one of the great comebacks in Calgary Flames history.
Well, we've heard a lot of different goal calls from the talented Rick Ball over the years, but that might just be the best. What a wild night it was in Nashville, capped off with that incredible OT winner from Matthew Tkachuk. Now, you never want to get too far ahead of yourself, but you're down 4-1. You're outshot 27-9 through two periods. It's one of the toughest buildings in the NHL to come back in. But you manufacture a comeback like that, you would think, you would hope anyway, that's the kind of game, the kind of win that can galvanize this group. Ryan Dietrich alongside Ty Pilsen, who's making his long-awaited Firestarter debut. Ty, welcome to the show.
Yeah, great to be here.
Let's get into your thoughts on the game. I mean, that was about as wild as they come. I mean, we throw around these terms every now and then, but that might have been one of the greatest comebacks that we've seen in Flames franchise history. What did you think, not only of the comeback, but of course, I mean, we can't go anywhere without talking about the hands and the move by Matthew Tkachuk there in overtime.
Yeah, to start off, this team always seems to play well in Nashville, which is kind of odd. I mean, you don't put a lot of stock in those because from year to year, teams change. But historically, this team has always found success in that building. And it is, like you said, a tough building, crazy crowd. You know, if anybody has a second, go and Google all the different fan chants, because when you're there, you almost have to have it on your Google, because just to follow everything they do. So very, very fired up crowd. So for this team to go in there like that, they were coming off, obviously, a difficult loss in Carolina, a game where all the, I guess, the light around the league was shining on it because of that Svechnikov lacrosse goal. Very tough loss. You know, it's on everybody's computers the next day because of that goal. And then you go into a barn like that, you struggle a bit at the beginning, and then you play a third period like that. And I mean, that's the third period we know this team's capable of. Not only did they control the pace and the tempo, but once they got the puck into the zone, they did a great job of trapping the puck in the zone, cycling it, moving it around, getting multiple shots, tiring out that Predators defense, the much vaunted Predators defense. It was just an excellent job. And, you know, the reason most of us love sports so much is it's like theater. It's very Shakespearean. So again, you come off that loss to Carolina where everyone talked about this goal of the year from Svechnikov. You go into Nashville, and then lo and behold, you become the story of the whole league probably last night. And you see an incredible comeback. You see the dramatics of, you know, coming all the way back. Then all of a sudden that 2-on-1 goal, which with a minute and a half left looked like a dagger. Then Matthew Tkachuk comes up with that incredible goal with 38 seconds, I think it was, left. Then you go to overtime, and then you get the goal. And, you know, we may be a little bit biased to our team here, but I'd like to think, to me, that was the goal of the year. And it was funny, after the game, they asked him about, you know, did you think about what to do? How do you shoot behind your legs? And the funny part is, of course, he didn't really think about it.
Yeah.
It's instinctual. He is such an incredible player. He's got such an incredible hockey IQ. So to be able to do that shot, and I think what was most amazing to me is perhaps not even as much the fact it was between his legs, but that he roofed it like it was a Joe Sakic wrister. I mean, it had fire on it. He managed to get it off before Pekka Rinne came across the crease. Then you have the dramatics of the fact there was 1.8 seconds or two, I guess, according to the league. Just an absolutely incredible comeback.
And he's 21 years old. That's maybe the most incredible thing about this. And we keep, Matthew Tkachuk keeps surprising us in one way or another, but this is a guy that's not even close to entering his prime yet and is pulling off moves like that. And like you said, not only the talent to pull off a move like that, but in the split-second decision-making that it requires for a player to do that. He kind of broke it down, right? He's a very cerebral guy, but he calculated it instantly. He was talking in his post-game interview about how, you know, I probably didn't have enough time to pull it to my backhand and try to get a quick shot that way or reposition my body and get it away off the forehand. It's kind of a bouncing puck anyway, so it would have been a tricky play to pull off, but... So he's doing all that math in his head as he's surrounded by three Predators D-men, and he still manages to do it. So it's kind of a glimpse into the sort of player and the kind of mindset that Matthew Tkachuk has when he plays the game, because there are, as a few of the players said, I think Oliver Shillington said it afterwards, only Tkachuk can pull off a goal like that. He might be right, and that doesn't just you know, include guys on this team. We're talking league-wide. This is a guy that is in elite territory. And like we said, probably still 3 or 4 years from really entering his prime. So a lot to be excited about for Flames fans right now.
Yeah, you hit the nail on the head with that one. I mean, he broke down the goal. And really, when you think about it, he said, you know, I didn't have a chance to go forehand, didn't have a chance to go backhand. That was all made up in his head in about an eighth of a second or less. It's that instinctual ability, talent that you can't teach. By the time you get to the NHL level, you're talented. All these guys were phenomenal players. They likely grew up as the best player in their association. They were, a lot of them, stars in junior. But to really separate yourself from being a star NHL player or a very good NHL player to becoming a superstar, which I think Matthew Tkachuk is well on his way to becoming, those instinctual moves, that ability to think the game faster than everybody else. When you see him behind the net with the puck, the things he manages to do, the decisions he makes where the player is assuming he's going one way and he goes another, his ability to control the puck and, like I said, to anticipate plays is what separates him. And it is remarkable at his age that you're already seeing the things that you're seeing from him. And yeah, it's one of the overused cliches, and we have so many in sports and in hockey especially, but you know, the sky's the limit. But I mean, really, the sky is the limit for this player.
Yeah. I want to play a quick clip from Bill Peters, who responded with this after being asked by our Flames TV colleague, Brendan Parker, what a win like this can do for the team.
Well, we're going to find out, right? We're going to find out moving forward, but it should be a springboard to bigger and better things. That's what I hope happens.
Did you teach him that goal?
No. He was excellent. In the first period, we didn't have many guys engaged. He was engaged. He drug guys into the battle. Chucky was by far our best player tonight, and that was right from the drop of the puck, so that's good to see. And we need more guys on board like that right from the start of the game.
Yeah, Matthew Tkachuk is an emotional driver on this team. I mean, there's no two ways around it. And again, that's something you hear a lot. And I think for a lot of people, it's difficult to wrap your mind around, you know, the thought process that every player should be extremely emotionally engaged all the time. But it can be very difficult to do. And he's just one of those players that lives and breathes this game. And he is so invested in it on every shift and right from the get-go. And that is something that teammates will feed off of. It's something that teammates will gravitate towards, and it's something teammates will emulate. And you know, right from the beginning last night in Nashville, you saw a guy that was trying to impose his will on the game, and that can be a very difficult thing to do. And then lo and behold, by the third period, you saw him bring that passion and actually dictate what was going to happen, clearly by scoring the tying goal and then that incredible winner in overtime.
Matthew's a funny player because he's actually, you know, he's very honest, very cerebral, as we've mentioned, but he's also kind of self-deprecating too when he breaks down his own skill set. He's always kind of complimenting his brother Brady as being the flashy guy. But by the way, head to Twitter right now and check Brady's comments on the goal, because he's actually saying Matthew is the flashy guy and he's more the meat and potatoes guy. So that battle will sort of rage on throughout the season. But on the note of Tkachuk's skill set, you know, he knows his limitations, and he doesn't have many, but he's not the best skater out there. He said that many, many times over, but what he does so well is he puts himself in a position to play the puck well, as he did on that overtime goal, as he did on the tying goal with 39 seconds left in regulation. He just uses his body, kind of like Jaromir Jagr did, where he kind of sticks out his behind and wards off defenders that way. Ty, what do you make of his ability to learn that at such a young age and be able to use it as effectively as he is now in a league that is becoming more about your wheels?
Yeah, I think, you know, that's really what separates him from a lot of players. And it's kind of irrelevant sometimes to how good a skater some of these guys are. But once they have the puck, they just kind of see the game differently. So once he's in the position with the puck, again, he anticipates things. He makes plays that defenders don't see coming. He's got so effective at that drop pass between his legs, kind of a no-look close to the net where he knows where his teammate is. The defenseman is not anticipating that play. And by him chucking the puck back between his legs as he's trying to go the other way, everything shifts and all of a sudden you have a guy wide open by the net. And when he doesn't have the puck, again, finding open ice sounds like an easy thing to do, but finding the proper spot on that open ice is difficult. And I think if you go back and watch his goal, as incredible as it was, if you watch his zone entry, he swings out wide and he is probably, I don't know, five feet off the boards and then swings in kind of in a U, like a lot of players are taught. Stay outside, don't clog up the middle. And then lo and behold, the moment he gets to that piece of the open ice, there's that puck. And to anticipate that seems that's impossible. I mean, that's, you know, mathematically you can come up with a formula that says nobody's going to be able to see that rebound coming the way it does and end up where it is. But lo and behold, he's there. And again, those are those things where it's just instinctual. It is just his makeup. He sees the game again differently or slower, I guess, very much, you know, the old Gretzky rule, but he sees it differently and slower than everybody else. And he's able to anticipate things like that. And he puts himself in the perfect spot.
That's 3 points last night for Matthew Tkachuk. He leads the team with 13 on the year so far, and we'll take that into the weekend as the Flames close out a 5-game, 10-day road trip, a stop in Columbus on Saturday, and they finish it up on Sunday against the Washington Capitals. So later on this episode, we're going to catch up with Pete Blackburn of CBSSports.com. A full disclosure, we actually did record that segment prior to last night's game, or Matthew Tkachuk's goal probably would have dominated the discussion, but some great insight there from Pete, so stay tuned for that. But that is kind of a nice segue into our next segment, and it'll come up again as we do talk to Pete. And Ty, I want to get your thoughts on this because I know you get these on occasion as well. I got an email from a student in Buffalo, New York, Michael Platt. Thank you very much for the note. He says, I desperately want to work in sports media, and my dream is to cover the Calgary Flames. How did you get into the position you're in now, and when did you realize this was something you wanted to pursue for a living? Ty, where did you get your start?
Well, I kind of fell in love with journalism in grade 12. Grew up here in Calgary and went to Dr. E.P. Scarlett High School, and they had a phenomenal journalism program there, and I kind of fell in love with that, writing for the student paper, and went on to college, majored in photojournalism, and I thought that's kind of the road I wanted to take. And then over a few years, I worked at some smaller papers, small towns, a small daily. Had the opportunity to come back here to Calgary in 2000 at the Calgary Sun. Got on board there and, again, started off as kind of the junior guy in the department, doing basic layout stuff and agate pages and writing here and there when you're able to. And worked my way up to deputy sports editor and then sports editor, and kind of oversaw the department for a few years. And then I moved up to assistant managing editor and kind of oversaw the whole newsroom. And then had an opportunity to come here. And, you know, as a born and raised Calgarian, passionate Flames fan, Roughnecks, Hitmen, Stamps. So it was a great opportunity after 17 years of working in newspapers. Well, I guess almost 20 years of working in newspapers. But, you know, I just tell anybody who wants to be involved, it's obviously like many businesses, almost every business these days, very difficult. But it's just a matter of putting in your time, being willing to start at smaller teams or smaller newspapers, smaller TV stations, wherever your passion takes you. But know that, you know, just like the players that kind of work their way up, it's just a lot of, you know, I don't want to say blood, sweat, and tears because that's kind of cheesy, but it's just a lot of hard work and a lot of time to perfect your craft. And then, you know, hope that you work hard enough that you get the opportunity to be put in a position to recognize that dream like I have been, which, you know, I'm very thankful every day for that.
How old do you think you were when you first actually started taking an interest in this? Were you the type of kid that was actually reading the paper when you were younger too, waking up in the morning and heading to the newspaper box down the street?
Yeah, we always had a newspaper subscription at home. I was lucky for that. I kind of had the glory days of 2 and 7 here with Ed Whalen. So, you know, you could watch your local Flames games here. You know, I'm old enough to remember when TSN first came on and that kind of revolutionized the landscape. But yeah, always a big sports fan, was lucky to live in this city where, you know, we've had some incredible players. Obviously the Stanley Cup win, I remember vividly. Yeah, it was just, it was a great sports city, on many levels. Geez, I was even like a Calgary 88s fan for those that remember the basketball team that was here, way back in the day. So yeah, big sports fan, and the ability to have turned that into a career and a living is definitely something that you can easily take for granted, like most of us do, I think, in a lot of things in our life or our profession, and, you know, something I'm very thankful for.
And Michael, maybe that's probably the best piece of advice that I can give, because Ty laid it out there so perfectly, is that we all come from different backgrounds, and Ty and I actually have very different approaches to how we came in this. And for me, it actually started in, I think it was 2005-06 when the NHL was coming out of the lockout. I was in school at the time, a younger kid, and really took an interest in HTML and web design and things like that. And of course, I was a huge hockey fan. And one of the things I did when the NHL season kicked off that year, because obviously there was a lot of fanfare coming out of the lockout, was all the teams launched new websites. And I was a big consumer of the old message boards. So I was like day one, I was like the first guy who signed up and got right back on the horn there as soon as they unveiled their new platform. And over the course of that season, I started talking with various people who were involved on the website of things. This was actually with the Edmonton Oilers. And I started talking to a guy by the name of Mark Ciampa, who now works for the New Jersey Devils. But I told him when I was, I think, 15 or 16 years old, I said, I want to work for you one day. I think I bugged him and his colleague a few too many times with sending some haphazardly drawn wallpapers that I made in Photoshop and said, hey, why don't you put this on the website? And who knew that 3 or 4 years later, I actually got an internship with them and kind of, you know, battled my way through that. And, you know, I would never, ever tell somebody to work for free, but the value of an internship is invaluable. I can't recommend that enough. Get your foot in the door, get your feet wet, get the experience, get a few bylines if you're a writer. Just get that experience. And that turned into a full-time opportunity for me. I did try a little bit on the more traditional media side too, with Sportsnet and a few of the papers around. Worked for the Winnipeg Jets for a couple of years, so I've moved around a little bit, but I'm a Calgary native, so coming home to Calgary and the opportunity here to work for the hometown Flames was obviously there for me. And the thing about digital media is that it's all encompassing. You know, we have writers, we have video producers, we have graphic designers, social media experts. There isn't a role that you can't carve out for yourself if you put in the work and find it, because it's such an evolving industry, and I just can't recommend that enough. So basically what I'm telling you is go learn how to do everything, because it will all be valuable to you, and it all has a value in how the game is covered nowadays. So, Michael, thank you so much for the email, and I'm going to respond over email as well, give you kind of a personal note that way. Stay with us. Coming up after the break, Pete Blackburn of CBSSports.com.
Book your holiday and Christmas events with the Calgary Flames. Be so close to the action, you can hear the crunch of a body jam. Warm up by the fire of the Flames goal celebration. And enjoy exquisite food and beverages. The Calgary Flames premium experiences are equipped to accommodate groups from 20 to 100 people. There's nowhere else your guests can celebrate the holidays quite like this. Book your event today. Visit calgaryflames.com/holiday events. The Sea of Red lives here.
Before we get into the really hard-hitting stuff, I kind of have to ask you, based on a piece you wrote on CBSSports.com recently, do you share Pierre-Luc Dubois' enthusiasm for Love Island?
I do not. I don't even really know what Love Island is. I think, like, my best guess, and I think I've heard it in passing, that it's literally just like a sort of like a dating, like a weird dating show, sort of like yeah. Bachelor thing on an island. I don't watch it, but I'm glad that he enjoys it so much that it literally keeps him up at night.
Yeah, absolutely. There's always something like that, right? I think The Bachelor was sort of the hot topic for years around dressing rooms. It's, I don't know. I don't really understand it, but guess I'll have to keep watching and bring it up in the Flames room one day. Just going in a bit of a different direction. I do want to get your thoughts just generally. We're a month into the season now. Typically, at this point, the 15-20 game mark is when we see things start to settle in a little bit, and we're kind of at that point now. So what has stood out to you so far, and maybe in particular, as far as the Flames are concerned, in the Pacific Division, where there have been a few surprises so far?
Yeah, I mean, the Pacific Division, obviously the big one there is the Oilers. So I don't think that anybody expected them to come out as hot as they have. But, you know, Edmonton being at the top, Vancouver being right below them, Vancouver's been so much fun. I've been talking about it on Twitter quite a bit, but like as a person from Boston who, you know, was basically taught to hate the Canucks after 2011,
yeah.
Like finding myself in this position here now where I'm watching the Canucks on like basically on a nightly basis whenever they're on, and I'm thoroughly enjoying that experience because it's such a fun team and they have so many fun young players. And, you know, I've been very critical of Jim Benning and sort of some of the moves that he's made there. But there's no denying that they've got a lot of young talent to build around, and it's very exciting. And that team has been a ton of fun. So yeah, the Pacific Division, those two teams at the top is really surprising, even if we're just a month into the season.
You know, and kind of on that note, I mean, obviously they wouldn't be where they are without some of the strong performances they've had, and JT Miller's had an incredible start, but Elias Pettersson is always going to be at the forefront of some of the discussions. So looking at, and I know we in the media tend to get caught up in paces, you know, that discussion tends to dominate the discussion early on in a season, but, you know, last year we had six players finish with 100 or more points, and early on, you know, it looks like we could see as many as 10 this year, Pettersson being one of them. What do you think we're going to see by the time this kind of wraps up in April?
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised. I mean, because you look at sort of the way the league's trending, the like offense is becoming definitely more plentiful. And even you look at sort of, you know, I look at how like defensemen have changed over the past handful of years, where now there's like this new prototype of defenseman where puck moving and just being mobile is very, very valuable and, you know, seen as a really strong suit, even if you're not necessarily a stay at home guy. I think those stay at home guys are becoming more rare these days. And I think that's leading to more scoring. And so these point totals last year was crazy, but I don't think that I think we might be able to look back on that in a few years and say, maybe it wasn't that crazy. Maybe the game is sort of shifting towards higher point totals and more scoring and things like that. So, yeah, I look at it, and, you know, there's definitely a very high amount of talent in the league right now in terms of scoring talent. And I think that at the end of the year, a lot of those guys, even if they don't get past 100, there's going to be a lot of guys hanging out around that area.
Through four decades, our passion has never wavered. It unites us. It defines us. It is who we are. Like an eternal flame, together in red. We continue to fuel the fire for our 40th season and beyond. Because there is only one sea of red, and it lives here.
Yeah, I mean, Tampa Bay is a really interesting case because we all sort of criticize them, and they, like, you know, after seeing what happened in the last playoffs, we were like, maybe you guys should focus less on the regular season and, yeah, and maybe take your foot off the gas a little bit, so that you're playing some meaningful games at the end of the year and transitioning into the playoffs. I think they may have taken that a little bit too strongly because they looked pretty bad here in the early going. Yeah, I mean, as a Bruins fan, and somebody in Boston, seeing what's happening right now, even if it is the first month, seeing what's happening to Tampa Bay and Toronto right now is very, very pleasing, from my perspective, especially with the Bruins just banking wins. I think that, I mean, it's important. I know it's very early, but it's important when you're in a three-team race like that, or what's perceived as a three-team race, to bank as many wins as you can. While these other teams are struggling, that could literally make the difference at the end of the year. So I'm surprised that it's been such a struggle for Tampa. I still think that they have one of the most talented rosters in the league, and I expect them to pull through at some point. But, you know, it also sort of begs the question, it's like, well, at what point do you consider a change in leadership there, behind the bench? Because I know that question was brought up after the playoffs last year, and it's somewhat of, you know, ridiculous to say, well, let's fire the coach after you just had coached the team to an absolutely, you know, historic regular season. But I do think that there might be some discussion to be had if they continue to struggle, because the talent is obviously there. And then in Toronto, you know, their defense is still very much an issue. You know, they're a very fun team, and obviously they have offensive firepower, and it doesn't help that John Tavares is out of the lineup.
Yeah.
But they definitely need to be more responsible defensively and in their own end, and they're not getting fantastic goaltending. So there are issues there, and it's surprising because those teams are expected to be two of the better ones in the Eastern Conference.
You know, I like the point you brought up there about how a team is able to bank points early on in the season. I mean, those count for the rest of the year. We all know that. So maybe another good example is the Colorado Avalanche, and they've given themselves a bit of a racetrack, right? Points in 10 of their first 12 games. But what do you think they look like with the potential long-term absences of Landeskog and Rantanen?
Yeah, it's very concerning. And you talk about one of the most explosive and dynamic lines in the entire league. And I think Nathan MacKinnon is the driving force of that line, but that's not to say that, yeah, those other guys are passengers, because they're certainly not.
Yeah.
I do think that they've added a bit of depth. They're not as one-dimensional in terms of just being a really top-heavy team this year as opposed to the past prior year. So, well, it'll be an interesting challenge for that team to see, you know, what exactly they have behind the top line, because I do think, you know, as much as they might have a little more depth to them this year, they're still very much carried by that talent up front because it's so, so good. And it'll be interesting to see if they can overcome that hurdle, especially in a division that's pretty tough in terms of what's at the top there. I know it's, you know, some of those teams have taken a step back this year, but it's still a pretty tough division. And so it's disappointing because they got off to such a good start, and they're an extremely exciting team, and it's always fun to watch that line. But it will maybe it does allow them to sort of see what they have and have this hurdle that maybe strengthens them down the road.
Pete Blackburn joining us here on the Firestarter podcast. You can follow him on Twitter at Pete Blackburn. Pete, I want to go back to Tuesday night, the Flames losing 2-1 to the Carolina Hurricanes. Obviously, if we're talking, you know, headlines league-wide, Andrei Svechnikov made waves with that lacrosse-style goal on David Rittich. What are your thoughts on that? And is it almost surprising that we don't see that move attempted more often with the kind of skill these guys have nowadays?
Yeah, I mean, the skill's obviously there. I think, you know, the big reason why we don't see it is because there's not enough time and space for a lot of those guys to pull that off. You know, you see it with, like, major lapses in coverage in lower levels and things like that where, you know, it happens more. Like, there's more scoring in you know, these lower leagues. But, you know, there's just not enough time in space for a lot of these guys to even pull off these moves. And the goaltenders are better, obviously, too. So, I mean, it's still unbelievable that he was able to pull that off. And it's unbelievable that it took this long because you look at the Michigan goal, Mike Legg, it was, what, 96? And yeah. Not a single NHLer has been able to pull it off as far as I know. There might be a guy who did it, but as far as I know, I think that's the first guy who's ever successfully done it at the NHL level. So the fact that it took that long in a league where the skill is so, so high, it's unbelievable, and it looked so great. I mean, it's those goals are so much fun. And credit to Treshnikov for actually making it a legal one too, because the stick below the crossbar, and it was beautiful. I loved it. I know that, you know, a lot of Flames fans probably didn't love it, but I think it's one of those goals where even if you're a Flames fan, you probably like, all right, I respect it.
Wow. And even David Rittich after the game was saying, he's like, well, what am I going to do? That was just I think he said that was a sick play. So, I mean, like, what do you do, right? You know, it's interesting because I think after that goal, I went down a bit of a YouTube wormhole, as I tend to do before going to bed. But seeing that Svechnikov had tried it at least once before, I saw it in a game against the Islanders. And maybe what separates him from what, you know, Nils Höglander did in the SHL the other day is there's no flex. There's no compression on the stick, right, where they kind of use – you know, the force to get it up that way. He just kind of softly scooped it up in one motion. I think to me, that's what was most impressive. And that's why I'm kind of wondering if we see it more often, because that split second, I think, is almost enough time to be able to pull it off, you know, as you mentioned, in the slim amount of time that they actually have.
Yeah. And I saw that, that Bob McKenzie said yesterday that, Svechnikov was practicing it, during the morning skate session before he actually scored it. And, you know, if he's practicing it and getting it done successfully, I wonder if that sort of inspires some of these other very skilled players to practice it and give it a shot of their own during games. So we'll see. I mean, now that we know that it's possible, I feel like that might open some doors.
Yeah, and Johnny Gaudreau has tons of talent, and he's doing all kinds of stuff like that in the warm-up too. So I'm kind of waiting for that day. He kind of sets up in the office and looks like he's going to do it every now and then. So, you know, I'm hoping, because I think Flames fans would like to see that, but we'll see.
I'm hoping for the day that Johnny Gaudreau is able to actually light his stick on fire and take it in a breakaway competition, because the fact that the NHL wouldn't let him do that a few years ago, it still haunts me. I need to see Johnny Gaudreau with an actual flaming stick.
Well, just think of the marketing opportunities for us, too. Like,
seriously,
that's all
the Flames? Come on.
Pete, not to pump your tires too much, but, I mean, that's what we do here on the Firestarter podcast. Your Twitter account is probably one of the best things going when it comes to how the game is covered nowadays. And you're obviously a really active user. You have been for some time. Where did the motivation come from to cover the game that way, and how have you evolved your approach over the past few years?
The motivation came basically like the same way my motivation for getting into just what I do as a whole. And it was, you know, growing up, I wanted to be a sports writer, and I went to school for journalism. And, you know, my intent was always like taking the traditional path. I'm going to be, you know, a newspaper writer, and then like sort of build my way up and, you know, kind of grind for a little bit. And then the closer I got to that actual, you know, that actual space, and, you know, I did some internships in college and stuff, I realized that everybody was just miserable, and like everybody seemed so jaded, and like they didn't actually even enjoy sports anymore. And that's sort of when I decided that, like, if I ever lose my passion for like enjoying sports, because sports is such a big part of my life, if I ever lose the enjoyment that comes with sports, I'm just not going to do it anymore. I'll quit my job. I'll find a job doing something else, because sports are too important to me. And so, you know, I decided that I wasn't going to do the traditional route, and I was going to try something different, trying to sort of like carve my own way. And so that's when I started blogging in college instead of doing newspaper stuff. I started my own blog. I wrote every day for that for like 3 or 4 years. And I've always just kind of maintained the approach that I want to do things my own way and do things differently and always have fun with it rather than just being, you know, dry and robotic and you know, just a traditional boring sports media journalist. So I take that same approach with my Twitter and with hockey. And it's really important to me to sort of make hockey more accessible to people who, you know, especially in America, in the United States, where it's for sure the fourth most popular sport of the major ones. And I want to change that. I want to make hockey like more accessible and more enjoyable for people who may not otherwise be exposed to it. So that's where the highlights stuff comes from whenever I share on Twitter. Like, I just want that. I want it to be seen. I want it to be visible for people who otherwise wouldn't see, you know, hockey highlights on SportsCenter or something like that. So that's been very, very important to me. And, you know, just as far as like how I've changed over the past couple of years, I definitely think that I'm maturing a little bit. You know, I think that a lot of people would argue with that. But I, you know, from my perspective, I've learned to sort of like take a step back from Twitter, and because I see hockey Twitter as a very toxic place sometimes, and a place that, you know, it's bogged down with negativity and it sort of eats itself. And you know, over the past couple of years, in particular, like, it's gotten to me. It's sort of, you know, I enjoy hockey, and like, I use Twitter as a place to go to do that. And I feel like a lot of hockey Twitter has sort of hindered my experience by just like the infighting and everybody having to, you know, agree on the same things and people fighting over whether it's suspensions, whether it's, you know, hits, whether it's, you know, what team is better and things like that. There's just so much fighting, and a lot of it was coming into my mentions, and I would let it like ruin my night, and I would let it ruin my days, and I would get into arguments with people. And I think over the past couple of years, I've gotten a lot better with that, just in terms of, you know, realizing that I don't have to respond to everybody, and I don't have to, you know, to get into these fights. And I think it's an approach that I've taken where it's like, I'm not here to argue. I'm here to, you know, enjoy the sport, and I'm here to try to add some entertainment and some value and help enhance the experience for other hockey fans rather than fighting. And I think that it's led to a much more enjoyable experience for me, and hopefully for other people too.
Well, that was a pretty terrific answer there, Pete. And that's actually kind of, you answered my next question, because this is sort of our theme to this episode, talking how the sports media landscape has changed and undergone such a transformation over the past few years. And the impetus for me to ask that question is, you know, occasionally, and I'm sure you do too, a few emails end up in my inbox every now and then just asking, you know, where did you get your start? How did you do this? What do you recommend? And everybody's situation is different, and how they deal with, like you said, the social media aspect has become such a big portion of it too. So I always like to get people's perspectives on that stuff, because it is so important too. And we know how much social media can affect a person's livelihood outside of the internet. So with that in mind, this one actually might cause the biggest stir on the internet. Is it GIF or GIF? Because I've got an opinion, and it seems to be pretty unpopular here in the Flames office.
So I'm going to assume that your opinion is that it's a soft J.
Well, okay. Let's hear what you got first. I don't want to reveal my.
Okay. So I know that the creator of the format and the file format says that it's a soft J. I don't care. It's always a hard J, or a hard G in my mind. It's GIF. And I've stuck with that the entire way through. I don't care. I thank him for his contributions, the person who created the format. I don't care. It's GIF in my mind, and it will always be GIF. And nobody will ever change my mind on that. I don't care.
Pete, we were getting along so well. Like, why did you have to go and ruin it like that? I don't. Okay, fine. But why did you actually, on that note, why did you think I was going with the soft J route?
Because I feel like it's, so you said it was unpopular.
Yeah, okay, fair.
I think that a lot of people, when they first see it, they have GIF in their mind. And so yeah. When somebody comes and tells them that it's GIF, they disagree. And that's sort of, that's where I am. And I think that GIF is usually the more unpopular. Yeah.
Okay. Well, I'll continue. I do it silently nowadays, but I'll continue fighting the good fight, in my opinion. Pete, thank you so much for your time. Really appreciate your insight on the league and about media, because that's it's all so important. So I really appreciate you stopping by.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me.